Now, I don't know if you know this, but it is estimated that this weekend, about 115 million people will travel for Christmas. In fact, I'm sure there's a handful of us that traveled in. I know I met some of you out in the lobby from some far distances. Now, about 103 million will travel via car. So that's the most common mode. About 7 million will travel by plane. I imagine there's a handful of us here tonight that did that. And then the other group is called Other, which I had to look into this, but about 5 million will travel by train, bus, or by cruise ship. Or I guess if you're Elon Musk, maybe you'll travel by SpaceX. I don't know. But however you might travel this year, however far you might go or not go, one thing I can almost guarantee you is that none of us are traveling by camelback or by foot. Am I right? If you are, let me know afterwards. I would love to know your story. That would be very interesting, right? Because most of us, that's not the case. But in the biblical Christmas story, travel was actually a key part of the whole thing coming together. We know the angels traveled from heaven down to earth, vast distance, of course. We can't quantify that. We know that the shepherds, as the kids did a great job telling us the story, the shepherds traveled from a field nearby. But Mary and Joseph, Mary is probably 12 to 14 years old at this point, and Joseph is probably in his early 20s. They traveled about 90 miles. Now, when we hear 90 miles, we think, not a big deal, right? We travel that probably frequently. But when you think about doing that, pregnant, either on foot or by camelback on rough terrain, that was quite a journey. But there's another group that we don't talk about as much, and that is the wise men or the magi. And it tells us that they traveled from Babylon to Bethlehem, which is about 900 miles. They made a significant journey to come and to see Jesus. So I thought it'd be fitting we talk about them just for a brief moment. So let me read to you a little passage from Matthew chapter 2 that tells us a little bit about the wise men and their journey. Matthew chapter 2 verse 1 says this: "When Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod, magi or wise men from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, 'Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' Then verse 9 says, 'They went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stooped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh." So the kids nailed it. Good job, kiddos. Now, the wise men, there's a couple things that I think are good to know. First of all, they were extremely wealthy. Those three gifts that they gave had a hefty price tag at this point in time in history. In fact, it would have been tremendously helpful for Mary and Joseph as they raised Jesus. But we also know from history about the Magi that they were very powerful people, powerful men. Now, we are told in Christmas tradition that they were kings, but history actually tells us that's not true. However, they were a key part in the king decision making. And so they held extreme power. But they also traveled in groups when they did travel. Now, oftentimes we assume there were three wise men because there were three gifts that were presented. But history likely tells us that it was a large group of people that gathered upon that evening to come and see this baby Jesus. So I don't know if you caught it, but if your favorite Christmas song is We Three Kings, we totally just killed it for you. And I apologize, Christmas may be ruined. If you don't know what that song is, you're totally fine. It's all good. Now, the biggest thing about the Magi that's worth noting is that they were masters at studying the sky. This is what they were known for. Now, when you and I travel, we typically travel with Google Maps or maybe Waze, or if you're really adventurous, maybe you try Apple Maps just to see where you might land. But for them, some of you got that, it's cool. Those are all the Google people in the house. But for these guys, they traveled, think about it, 900 miles by following a star. Pretty amazing. Now, when we start to talk about the sky and the star, it's important to note that God's desire for you and I is to not get caught up in astrology. There's a difference between astronomy and astrology. Astronomy is the study of the sky and the star, the sun, the moon. Those are all wonderful things. We learn so much from that information. But when we start to move into astrology, we end up in a bit of a dangerous place. This is the horoscopes and looking at things for our own benefit. God's desire is for us not to do that. In fact, he doesn't want us looking at anything as a god or anything like that that might be us trying to pursue something for ourselves. What he prefers is that you and I look at creation, you and I look at each other, that we look into the sky and we see stars and the sun and the moon, and we are reminded of the great creative power of God. He wants these things to point us to God, not to become a god in our life. That's very important to him. And so as we begin to think about all of this, what is so fascinating is that God took these magi, these wise men, who were pursuing the wrong thing, and he used it to guide them to the right thing. Isn't that fascinating? He took their love of following the stars, and he used it to lead them to baby Jesus. And I got to wonder, maybe tonight you're here, a room this size, we kind of came from all over. We come from different places. And I just want to tell you that the amazing thing about God is that he meets you and I right where we are. He doesn't wait for you to become some perfect person or to get your life in order. In fact, oftentimes, he will meet people in some of the craziest circumstances that you probably never want to tell that story again to anyone else. And yet, God met you right there. God meets us, and I know for some of us, we may be feeling this, in our lowest points, in our most broken points, possibly even our most embarrassing points, and yet God says, man, I love you, and I'm reaching my hand out to pull you. And he says, I don't need you to change so that I can reach you, but once I get my hands on you in the most loving way, I'll begin to move you into the direction, the place and the person that I desire for you to be. Isn't that amazing? That God sees you right where you are, just as you are. And can I just tell you, if you're away from God tonight, just know that his hand is reaching out for you. But the Magi aren't a part of the story only because of that moment. They're also a part of the story because they constantly had their eyes in the sky. They were always looking up. Now tonight, when you go out, let's see, it'll be about 6, the sun may be down. When you go out tonight and look up into the sky, most of us, depending where we live, we will only see a handful of stars. Why? Because of a thing called light pollution. The more light there is in the city, the more light there is around us, we are robbed of the beauty of all of the stars in the sky. But if you've ever been out into the country, if you've ever been out into a part of the world where there's no light pollution, it is absolutely fascinating how many stars there are all across the sky. More stars than you and I could possibly count. Now, why is that important? Because the truth is, similar to light pollution, we have life pollution that comes in. We have all of these distractions that are constantly invading our life. All of these things that are pulling us from every which way. And it's so easy for us to take our eyes off of God, for us to be distracted and get caught up in our own world and in our own things and have these challenges that arise because we simply lost focus. It's a great struggle, especially for those of us that are Christ followers. There are always distractions pulling on us. Imagine being at, I think this is funny, imagine being at Starbucks. I hear they're open tomorrow. That's news to me. I don't know why they're open. That's okay. Imagine tomorrow you go to Starbucks for whatever reason, and you're sitting at Starbucks all by yourself, but you don't have your laptop, your computer, your phone. You're just sitting there drinking coffee. Would you feel awkward? Most of you would, especially the younger generation. Why? Because we're so used to being distracted that it almost is uncomfortable when we're not. And this is what we're talking about. It's so easy for our eyes to drift in the crazy world and the culture that we live in because we have all of these things that are vying for our attention. I think of three areas in particular: your career, your hobbies, and your family. These are three wonderful things that God desires for us to have or to pursue, depending on where you are in your stage of life. And yet, they can also be some of the things that distract us the most. They could be some of the things that cause the most grief. Some of you tonight, you are dreading getting together with your family, and they may be here right now, and that's awkward. Don't look at them right now. But you're dreading tonight. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because the truth is, you don't need to exchange gifts tonight. You need to exchange apologies. Somebody's going down tonight, and I had nothing to do with it. I'm just saying. Or forgiveness, all right? But that's the truth, isn't it? Why? Because, man, when we get in our families and we start letting the world and we start getting distracted and we start pursuing things for our own benefit and we stop worrying about bringing this thing together, we become divisive. I think about careers. And I know some of us just have jobs that require odd hours, but maybe for those of us that work those late jobs when we don't always have to, can I just tell you, in 20 years, the only people that will remember that you worked late are your kids. And so what God is saying is, hey, I don't want you to lose these categories or these wonderful things, but I want you to look at them through my lens. I want you to look at your family and go, God, how can I make an impact? How can I be a light to my family? He wants you to look at your career and do what you need to do, but do it in a way that brings him glory. He wants you to have hobbies. I don't know if he wants you to buy that boat, so I can't help you there. But he wants you to have hobbies. That's all wonderful, but he wants us to do it through his lens so that I can bring him glory and keep us from pain. There's a classic Christmas movie. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. We'll see. The movie Elf. Anybody? Elf? Yeah? Anybody watch it today? It's 5 o'clock. There's a chance. A couple of you guys? Cool. So in case you're one of the two that haven't seen it, Elf is a movie. Somebody got that. Elf is a movie about a little baby boy that he's born and he's accidentally shipped off to the North Pole, which I know sounds really weird as I say that. Not quite sure why we're talking about this, but hang with me. So they ship this baby off to the North Pole, and he grows up working at the North Pole, working with a bunch of elves. And throughout his journey, he feels awkward. He feels out of place. He feels like he doesn't have purpose, primarily because he's so large. Here's a picture, just to give you a picture. All right, so he's significantly, it's Will Ferrell too. That's a bit sketchy, I get it. He's larger than everyone. He's a little bit awkward. He doesn't see things the same. But if you remember in the movie, the story is he decides, I'm going to go back to Earth from the North Pole, and I'm going to find my real father, and I'm going to try to figure out what I'm doing here. And on the journey, it's actually beautiful. He builds this relationship back up with his dad, and it's a process. And as he does that, he begins to discover who he is and the impact that he can make on the world. And I know it's kind of corny to think about a little movie like Elf, but the truth is, I wonder if many of us need to make a similar journey in this upcoming year. This idea that, man, if I could spend some time pursuing my father, pursuing God, trying to discover who he is and what that means for me, it could change your life. God sent Jesus from heaven to earth to bridge the gap for us to be with him. And he did it because he loves you. He loves you. He created you. He loves you. And he has a purpose for you. And I don't know where you are this Christmas. And I get it. We got kids and we're running from place to place. But I just wonder if maybe there's just a little bit of this that God's saying, hey, would you listen to that for a minute? Would you think about that just for a minute? Because I have come to be with you. All around the world at Christmas Eve, churches will gather probably about right now, and they'll begin to light these candles. And some of you, it's the only reason you came, and so you're just glad I picked up the candle, and I get it. But it's important that we understand what this is about. See, the candle symbolizes to us this idea, and we've been talking about it for the last few weeks if you've attended here, that love came down to meet us where we are at. That God said, I'm going to pierce through the darkness and I'm going to find my children so I can bring them hope and peace. And this baby Jesus that we're celebrating, and it's such a wonderful thing, the rest of the story is he's going to grow up, he's going to become a man, and he's going to willingly go up on the cross for our sin. He's going to die, and then he's going to rise again 3 days later, reminding us that we too have the power to conquer death through him. And so as I say that to you, I just want you to think about, man, where am I with God? Maybe you're away from him, and this might be a chance to just take a small step in his direction. Maybe you're already a Christ follower, and this is a time to go, you know what? It's time to recalibrate a little bit. It's time to realign with him. I want to give him my life. I want to see him work this new year. I want to see what he can do through me. God loves you so much, and this is why he sent Jesus. So as we light the candles tonight, would you just be reminded that first he came for you? But there's a second piece, and this is the beauty of the candle lighting. Once God enters into your life, the lighting of the candle, then he calls us to be a part of sharing this good news with others. And this is why we lean right and we lean left and we light each other's candle as a symbolism of what we too can do. That as the light begins to spread, we can overcome the darkness with the light and the love of Christ. So if you need hope tonight, can I just tell you, give your life to Christ. He will change it. It won't be perfect, but he will change it, and it will be glorious.